Hello everyone, welcome to all sorts of radio stations. Jill Trebilcock now with Father Bob Maguire. Today we are on April Rain's We Were Radio, People's Internet Radio, Australia Internet Radio, and who else are we on with, Stephen?
Me.
And Stephen Roberts, who from a council of the Cabal, who's doing all of this. And Stephen Roberts is the most fabulous, kind friend of mine. And we are so honoured to have you, Father Bob Maguire, the most famous Catholic priest in Australia, who has...
You're making it up, John.
Yeah, I am making it up. You told me to make it up.
Make it up.
Now, I'll make it up. So Bob will tell you a bit about himself in a minute, but there's just been a major film that came out that's going all around Australia, which is a bit of a Monty Python skit. How would you describe in Bob We Trust, Bob?
A eureka moment, but overseas listeners won't understand that because we had only had one significant... stand-up struggle with the authorities in this country in 1854, and it was called the Eureka Stockade. I'm calling my film, in fact, the recording of my Eureka moment insofar as we stood up to the authorities. We stood up with respect, mind you, because we're not, anarchists, so we did it respectfully. At the same time, they won, so... We were put out of the place in, after 38 years of faithful service. We were put out in 2012, and here we are 2014, 2 years later, ladies and gentlemen, and we're still trying to regroup so that what was left of our tour was the outreach work for the poor. We had to leave behind the ritual and the moralising in the church. Back of the church precinct. And here we are today, ladies and gentlemen. All we've got left is the Father Bob Maguire Foundation. But there it is. Can you see that?
We can. Lean it slightly forward. That's Bob's CD in Bob We Trust.
That DVD just came out as we spoke. Look at the pretentiousness in Bob We Trust, which the United States of America surely has got on the dollar bill. Not in Bob We Trust, in God We Trust.
We should get them to graffiti their bills and change it to Bob.
No, we can't. See, satire, I read in a book this morning, satire does not travel easily.
True.
So what we're talking about here is Aussie satire. Mm. And mind you, it mightn't travel easily with overseas persons. They might think, my God, this is a whole load of irreverent, maybe even disrespectful commentary. Which in Australianese is not, because in Australianese you can be irreverent without being disrespectful. Anyway,
Is that what happens, Father Bob, after you were retired at the age of 75 from being a reverend, you became an irreverent?
No, I am reverend. I'm still a priest in good standing with the Roman Catholic Church. The Archbishop said, you're doing marvellous work, but don't please do it here. So all we got caught with was not a transgression with regards to morals or to theology. It was a transgression of what? Cultural practice. We tried to get a Catholic parish, the first suburban Catholic parish in Melbourne, which really means only 150 years old. We tried to get a Catholic parish to show a bit of form as the heart of a neighbourhood. And that was frightened headquarters at the time. Now that we've got a Pope called Francis, it wouldn't be frightening Francis because Francis himself was brought up in that tradition in Latin America. Anyway, I just got caught short in a time warp at the end of the old Catholic Church and the start of the new one.
You did, Bob, but you've been sort of famous in Australia the whole time. But everybody followed you. How did that happen? How did you become so popular? I don't suppose you know.
Oh well, Aussie's the person who's down. Aussie's like that. I mean, traditionally,
the underdog.
Yeah, that kind of thing. The Aussies tend to like that. Mind you, they won't do much to help you up.
But, Bob, you weren't the underdog when you became popular. You were already a household name before.
Nothing as far as headquarters was concerned.
You were on a lot of radio with John Safran.
Yes, but that would have helped the spiral downwards as far as good standing in the Roman Catholic institutional structure. As far as the public was concerned, the more you went down with headquarters, the more you went up in their estimation, because for one reason or another, that's what the Aussie mythology is all about, you see, because that's how we start in 1777. We were down.
That's right. And your name is Maguire.
Yes.
And interestingly enough, there happens to be a fellow in Ireland whose name is Billy Maguire.
Yes.
Who is actually talking about the sovereignty in people. And I thought somehow, one of these radio stations, or everybody at the moment, are really interested. Well, not everybody. All these weirdo avant-garde. What was that word you said? Anarchists. That which I believe in anarchy in its true form is a very wonderful thing. The pure sort of concept of anarchy. Anyway, it's about sovereignty, Bob. How does liking Jesus help your sovereignty?
Yeah, well, sovereignty is a new world. Where does that come from, that word sovereignty? I heard another one yesterday, intersectionality. Look at that.
Ooh, that's a good
intersectionality.
One.
Something about where everything crossroads, you've got to have everything crossroading and meeting in a matrix and all that. So that sovereign thing, give me that. Does that mean the identity of the individual or?
Well, it's not that modern, because actually they have the sovereign seal in Ireland, and the sovereign seal, it's in all most of the constitutions that are about people, recognizing that we are all innately Christ-like. We are all innately sovereign people. We are innately Buddhas. Right? Do you get it?
I don't mind any of that. Yeah, there's the sovereignty of the individual and all that. But I mean, I've been banging on, I suppose, mainly about the sovereignty of the collective. But now that I have been extradited, so I haven't got a church or a fabric, a building, a set of buildings or a congregation, the collective has in fact, I've got less experience of the collective, the church collective now, and me as a member of the church collective, less now than I've had for 70 years, because I'm now an individual, still church individual, because in good standing with the institution, but also now I'm more secular. I have an individuality as Citizen Maguire, and that's what I'm going around with, that visa. I was in Ballarat yesterday, which is a rural town now out past your place.
Yep.
Talked about social cohesion at a training and education facility for single mums, so they can continue their. Now that's what you're talking about. You're talking about those young women. In fact, they would have used that word, I think, had it been on their vocabulary. This is establishing the sovereignty of individual single mums who want to continue to be well-educated as well as being mums.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I understand what you mean. And the week before that, another rural town called Echuca, where we're doing the same thing. So, I mean, something mysterious is happening, because I'm spending my time almost like a pilgrim on the secular trail, whereas I wasn't doing that when I was nailed down to the Catholic parish of South Melbourne. So I know what you mean. I think that's all around the countryside. People need to be, reminded of their individual dignity. The glorious ordinariness of the individual. I'm learning more and more and more about that.
You've always known that, Bob. That's actually brings us, because I don't know why, but I'm going to follow this idea. A lot of the problem that was happening with the Catholic Church and a lot of the debate that was going on in Ireland, and because I was going to Ireland and I was with you, who's a Catholic priest, and you and I have had quite a few conversations, I as a Buddhist, about the Eucharist and transubstantiation. And transubstantiation was a big argument that was going on, where people were saying, look, you can't literally take, be eating, all the literalists couldn't handle the idea of transubstantiation in the Eucharist. But what I'm saying is the intersectionality of this conversation, where it actually intersects again with what right now, Bob, is the intersectionality of sovereignty and human rights and the church and community rights. Exactly, yeah. What they're saying. So. Yeah. When I originally spoke to you about transubstantiation, which is when the priest offers, when you eat the bread and the wine in the church, I asked you, was there a particular technique that the priest does when, like, do you download Jesus or Christ consciousness as you're blessing the food? And your response at the time was, I can't really talk about that because there's sort of, you thought, but now I've actually read that is what priests do. It is actually public knowledge.
Jill.
That, yes, Stephen.
Are you monitoring either chat? The radio
chat?
No,
I'm not in my, no.
Or the Skype chat?
You monitor the chats. You just put the chat here for me, will you?
Well, you're not even monitoring the Skype chat.
I've got your chat. You've said, Jill, mute and take off your mic guard. Are you monitoring this? Yes, I've done both of that. I did mute, and I did take off my mic guard, Stephen.
Okay, good.
Yeah, okay.
Take off your mask.
Yes, and put on your breastplate of armor, which is what that song was about.
Yes.
And
yes.
That's why I came in with that song, because it says, it's sort of like a Buddhist tantra, it says, Jesus above me, Jesus. See, I'm not religious, but I am very spiritual. Well, so I suppose I am religious, but what I mean by that is I think it's really important that we connect with our divine and sovereign nature. I think there's so much to our sovereign nature that it is actually divine. And this song that we just played, which is called The Breastplate of St. Patrick, was saying, with Jesus above me, Jesus below me, Jesus before me, Jesus to the right of me, Jesus to the left of me, Jesus within you, Jesus within anybody who speaks about me. So in other words, it's like purifying the whole mandala, isn't it? Like it's purifying the whole world.
Yes, I would think so. I would think so. I mean, I don't know how long it's going to take for us to wake up to. So I was reading something this morning in the paper about the meteor that struck us. Was last year. It was only a few pounds big, but someone said, look, are we not aware of so much in the cosmos that impinges on our lives, but because they're inexplicable, we can't explain them, we ignore them. And that's, to me, that's what the human, apart from the cosmos and the material cosmos, we've got this social cosmos. And that's what the struggle is all about just now. I mean, there's people killing themselves all over the world because we have refused to come to the simple conclusion that we are all in this together. So you've got Christians killing Muslims, young men in the Central African Republic, hacking one another to death. You've got a Roman bishop standing up in his village trying to explain to the young men why they shouldn't be doing that. This is after, a generation or two or three of living peacefully together. The Syrians are doing the same, the Sunnis and the Shias, bombing one another. I can't understand it because it's almost what's happening in Crimea takes you back to Florence Nightingale and to the First Crimean War. This is all 150 years only. And we seem to be unraveling that model. And where is the model to fill the vacuum? Well, you would hope ideally with something like what you're talking about is the spiritual matrix. But who's talking about that around the world? All the religious leaders have run for cover.
Exactly. That's why you and I are talking about it, Bob, because we have to talk about it.
Well, we better keep not only talking about it, but proving beyond any reasonable doubt that it's got legs.
Yeah, well, then I reckon we can talk about, I agree, and so the legs are...
You've got transubstantiation. What we're looking for is the transubstantiation of the human race.
We are.
See? It's all right about the bread and wine, so leave it alone, because that's easy. It's the transformation, the transubstantiation of the human race. It's all about eating and drinking. It's all about blood and it's all about nourishment. You see,
it is. Yeah.
And there's people on the run in the world today than ever. Millions and millions of people are on the run. Nobody's sure whether to love them or hate them. Huh? Depending on where you are in the world, you either hate refugees, or you love them. The Italians seem to love them because they let them all in.
Yes.
The Aussies can't stand them because they're frightened that anybody who comes in might see through us. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I think it's one of those things like that marvellous woman Karen Armstrong talks about the Great Awakening.
Yes.
I think we might be on the verge, and I don't know how long a verge will last, of a social Big Bang. See?
And yes, Karen Armstrong Jones, who did the Golden Rule, we might be able to find that and play that. That's a very powerful speech that she gave on the Golden Rule.
Yeah, and all of that stuff that she comes up with 2,500 or whatever it was, before the Christian era of the Great Awakening.
Yep.
With your Confucius and your Buddha and your Greek philosophers, and you know, that whole mosaic of spiritual revivalists who came on the scene almost at the one time. So something's happening now, but all I can see around me is secular spiritualists. I can't see many religious spiritualists around the place that have got anything to contribute, except maybe our Frank, the Pope, who's walking around dropping a few pious words here and there, but mainly spreading the good news simply by being who he is, which is your sovereignty. See?
Yes, yes, yes. To be your own innate true self, and to be in touch with your own good heart.
Yeah.
And see, that's why, you know, like when Jesus did the bread and wine thing, it's hilarious, but then I'm dragging you back to this. But I'm having a deja vu experience, Bob. I've had this conversation. It's really weird. Anyway, so, like, you know, the reason that you were telling me or that I've come to understand over the years is, you know, bread and wine is what we all do, isn't it?
Yes, but we are the bread and wine.
Yeah, but we are the bread and wine. Yeah, we are. And, you know, metaphysically, that's actually correct anyway, like from the way science understands things now. Explain how we are the bread and wine, please.
Well, I'm not a philosopher, but I'm simply saying to go from the unknown to the known, you've got the idea of the sacrament of bread and wine. I mean, surely to God, he wasn't expecting ordinary human beings to be anything other than able to understand through things like eating and drinking, breathing in the air, having children, having a family. I mean, they're simple, 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 whether it's a refugee camp in Central Africa or whether it's a sophisticated condominium around the corner from this place. It's all about eating and drinking, hospitality, please welcome strangers. That's the bread and the wine. The bread and wine is the sacrament of hospitality. That's why it's stupid for the Roman Church to say to somebody who comes into the church for a service. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, as you know, the bread and wine is available only to the Catholic people in this church this morning. Visitors may, in fact, come up to the priest and receive a blessing, but you can't have the bread and the wine, and that's absolutely outrageous. Because it's the opposite to what the bread and wine mean. So when I say wear the bread and wine, at the end of the Mass, for example, you're supposed to say, ite missa est, go, you are sent forth, meaning you've been here to eat the bread and the wine. Before you ate the bread and the wine, you actually ate the book, because we have readings first.
Yes.
And you've got to eat that first. Then you can have the bread and the wine.
Yep.
Otherwise, you won't understand the bread and the wine. Now, darlings, we're sending you out into the world, or you're going out into the world to be the bread and the wine. In other words, people are going to eat you alive.
Yep.
See? And you're going to have to, there's got to be no bloodshed out there because of you. If there's any bloodshed, it's got to be yours. So that's enough spiritual motivation for ordinary human beings who have gathered together on a Sunday morning somewhere in the world and everywhere in the world to feel that they're going out the door not as somebody who is better than anybody else, but they go out the door to be eaten alive and to put their blood on the line. Now, what happened? Something happened where transubstantiation was pinched by the clerics and confined to clerical use in a ritual known as the Mass, you see? But there is no Mass if it hasn't got an exit. The exit is the bread and the wine has been consumed, go out and be consumed. Now, if that formula doesn't work, well, then it's an insult, so to speak, to the founder of the firm.
Well, let's take that back to how it originally began, because like Jesus was standing there, you know, wherever he was, and he was about to die, and they were doing what they always did. They always ate bread, and they always had something.
The Jews were having the bread, the Passover.
Right.
The Jews were having the Passover. He's a Jew, and he was having a Passover with his mates. They weren't home, so they didn't have a home to celebrate in, which the rules said, go to your home and do the ritual. So they hired a reception centre. They met there, but they did the same thing. They produced the bread and the lamb and the bitter herbs, all the things that they, the minutiae of the ritual of Passover. Yeah. Which had been carried on for what? How long? I don't know, 1,500 years or something.
Yeah.
See what I mean?
Yeah. And instead, that's what they did.
See? So that's there they are sitting down there with the bread and the wine, with the lamb, with the herb, with all this kind of stuff. All there on the table as they're reclining. They're not sitting. They're reclining. And they have the words that have to be read out, retell the story, how we were delivered from slavery. We'll go over the story. You see, we need to repeat the story over and over again. Then we're going to enact the story, because we're actually going to eat the lamb, which reminds us of the blood of the lamb that was supposed to be painted on the doors of their dwelling places in Egypt. Allegedly, according to the legend, the angel of death will not visit those houses, because the angel of death with good eyesight will actually see the blood on the door, on the lintels of the door, and pass by, whereas he will visit the Egyptians. Yeah, all of that kind of stuff. So, I mean, it's ordinary people around the universe can't possibly understand this ritual, and shouldn't be expected to either.
Well, I think they should be given the nuts and bolts of it, actually, Bob. Yep. I actually believe that every person should be able to download, just like from what I understand now, like when you're in the Eucharist and you turn when you bless everything, then you imagine that Christ actually comes into you, and that for that moment you actually become Christ. And also that I've read this, you know, so this must be true. And that also, I say I'm a Catholic and I'm taking communion. When I take the communion from you as the priest, then I, at that moment, become as Christ myself.
Yes.
Right? That means when I look at Stephen, I know that I am Christ-like myself, yes. Like Buddha-like, like God, yes. You know, pure. Yes. And Stephen is pure himself.
Right.
And so every member of my society is also Christ-like, right? This is really interesting. And interestingly enough, in Ireland, in the beginning, they had this time in Ireland which they called the Dark Ages, right? Now, the Dark Ages was actually a very bright age in Ireland in terms of saints, the same as it was in Tibet. When we were having a so-called Dark Age, there was a lot of Light Ages going on full of saints. In Tibet, there was Milarepa and a whole lot of famous yogis. In Ireland, there was a whole lot of famous guys and a guy called David. Now, you'll love this, Bob.
And lots of famous women.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know enough yet. I'm on a learning curve, Bob.
Important. The Celtic spirituality is driven by women.
Well, Boadicea.
No. Bridget and all of those, and Maeve was a
Bridget, yeah.
All of them. But you see, that's why your Patrick is a bit ambiguous hero to me, because in fact Patrick became a Roman bishop.
Mm.
I read the other day where in fact the mythological driving out of the snakes by Patrick could well mean that Patrick was responsible, as a good Roman bishop, for driving out the Celtic spirituality.
That'd be right. They took away their kundalini, their eros, their life force.
Yeah, that's right. Well, the Romans always need to be neat and tidy.
I can't believe the bloody Romans got the church, Bob. I mean, the Romans are the ones. How could
it was a bargain.
They hijacked Jesus. You know, the Romans.
No, they've never got Jesus. They got the church.
Yeah.
Jesus is free range. The church is battery driven.
Yeah.
So if you're lucky, you get them together at the same time, which I don't know whether I'll live long enough to see it, but that's what I'm waiting for, is for the church and Jesus to get together again.
be good, wouldn't it?
See what I mean? Well, we might, the way we're going, Jill, the way we're going, we might be able to patch together a second coming.
Well, that's what they reckon. There's a prophecy after this pope. It's meant to be time for Jesus to come back and say, you've all made a terrible bloody mess of things.
This will be a trickle up, Jesus, not a trickle down. So your Jesus has probably been hiding in the minds and hearts of the least likely people around the cosmos. Well, and will come out and come out only when it's safe.
Well, you know, and Jesus might have a different name. Like this Christ consciousness might be arising from all sorts of different ways.
We don't care about the name. We don't care about the name. We care about the spirit, the presentation of self. You see, the least likely persons, that's one of the parts of the Catholic / Christian spirituality is, in fact, you've got to go looking for the most deep and meaningful stuff from the least likely people. That's why we work with street people, you see, because most of the world thinks street people's are duds. Where my mob believes that the street people are the street philosophers.
Hey, listen, I agree with you. I'm torn, Bob. We've got a chat box here, and there's heaps of questions coming in for you. So one of them is from Tim. What, darling?
For me or you?
Well, they're for you, but you haven't signed into chat box because it's way too sophisticated for a 70-something-year-old monk.
Yeah. Well, I do Tim. Google Plus. I've got a chat box on Google Plus. I'm gradually working that out.
And yeah, go on. What's Tim saying? Please ask your guest to elaborate on the bargain, Gillian.
Jill,
the bargain. Sorry, Jill. Stephen wants to say
yeah,
something.
Stephen, keep interrupting. You've got to read the chat box to Bob, please.
You're okay. I just wanted to ask you, did you just call him a dummy?
I would not call Bob a dummy.
Did you? I called him street people duds.
I called him darling, maybe.
No, that's all right. Yeah, that's all right. Now, wait a minute. The bargain. I'm talking about
the bargain. The Catholics, the Romans hijacked Jesus.
Yes, the Catholics, the Christians are being persecuted in Rome. You're going.
No, I'm yelling. I'm going nowhere. I yell too much.
The Christians had gotten themselves to Rome. The Roman Empire was falling to pieces. The Christians were being, persecuted in vast numbers. They were being thrown to the lions and tigers in the Colosseum. One thing leads to another. The collapse of the Roman Empire bureaucratically could be stopped if we can find a bunch of public servants who are prepared to go the extra mile. Lo and behold, ladies and gentlemen, somebody says, why don't you go down into the ghetto and ask those low-life Christians who can read and write and count, and they're not suffering from plagues or diseases because they're not promiscuous, Your Holiness, they said to the emperor. And so because they were persecuted, they kept them to themselves, and they developed, as the Jews always have in persecution times, developed skills, literacy, numeracy, humour, all that stuff. So they went and knocked on the door of the ghetto and said, hey, listen, the boss wants to talk to you lot. So they said, nah, he'll chop our heads off. And they said, no, be not afraid. Trust me. You know, the famous political statement. Trust anyway. They went up, they met the emperor. And he said, look, I'll make you a bargain. You look after the public service of the Roman Empire. I will stop anybody from persecuting you. And in fact, I will go further and offer you a guarantee. I will give you the real estate belonging to some of the pagan temples in the Roman Empire, ladies and gentlemen. So the Christians went back and had a meeting, and all those in favour of taking the bargain, which they did. Now, that's 380 or something of the Christian era, and that's the beginning, ladies and gentlemen, of the merging or the attempted merger of the Christian gospel with the Roman institution. From then on, you've got the struggle, which is going on this very day as we speak. Will the Roman Church please extricate itself and end up with the Christian movement once again, the free-range Christian movement, and keeping under its control the Roman departmental structure? And that's what Francis is personifying. He's trying to get the Roman departmental structure to put itself back at the service of the movement. And the best of luck to him. Best of luck to him. It can be done. And we may live long enough to see it done, you see, which I would call the second coming.
Yeah, well, this is right. And this is this Christian thing that I'm saying. It's like, well, if only we could just have a more sort of pure view of everything, like cut to the chase, like cut right through. Like, you're a multi-faith fellow. And you understand that the essence that we all need to tap in ourselves and then I don't know which way to go with this, Bob. I don't know whether we're to jump straight over to stay in a positive thing or talk about pedophiles.
Ah, who wants to talk about pedophiles? You can talk about pedophiles if you want to.
Yeah, we'll talk about pedophiles another time, I think.
Yeah.
I think we'll stay where we are. So,
how much more are we going to do?
Oh, we've got another few minutes. We've got another, 20 minutes. Can you stay alive that long?
I've got to go around the corner to bless the block.
Oh, yeah, you've got to bless the block. Tell us about blessing the block, Bob.
Well, the block is a, I don't know what you'd call it, a commercial venture on television where they get all kinds of people to, couples, three, four, five couples to get together, compete against each other, take over a building, sometimes a block of flats, sometimes a motel disused. And in this instance, I think it's an old picture theatre around the corner from here. And they rip it to pieces and they install, what, four, maybe four? If there's four couples, each couple has to work on part of the building of an apartment inside the fabric of this.
This is a television show.
Yes, this is television. So we go around, that's a television channel, whatever it is, and they follow it on television. Every week you have discipleship that follows this, the block. How do you feel, Mary, that you and your partner have gone so far and the water came in and the storm, right? Anyway, today, apparently, it's the opening. No, it isn't. Yes, it is. It's the public. Now, listen to this and don't laugh, Stephen, from Michigan. You might end up with 20,000, 40,000 ordinary citizens coming to this street around the corner to line up to go in and view the finished four apartments. That's why we're around there, because we've taken a barbecue, which I don't know if Americans have got, a BBQ, and loads, tons of sausages and onions and stuff. We're around there selling this to the 40,000 people. we're not the only food deliverers. There are others there, but we're one of the best known. So whatever dollars we make out of the place, maybe I don't know, 8,000 Australian dollars, we'll come back here and go to look after the poop. That's what's on. And I've got to go around the corner of the invitation of the television station, because I've had a long association, because three or four of the places they've done up have been in my village of South Melbourne, Port Melbourne, you see.
Hey, that's fantastic. Bob, have you got that old church thing that you put the frankincense in and that you can wiggle around?
I haven't got that, and I'm not taking any of that incense, or I could take holy water and throw it, but I don't want to. See, what I've got to do, Gillian, is run with the fox and hunt with the hounds. I can go. I've got this thing here. Look, that I'll stick around me neck.
Oh, my God. Put it on now, just for the sake. Okay, so you've got your priest thingamajiggy.
It's only a thing. No, it's only a part of the priest thing. So right. I'll go with a part of the priest thing and say, hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to put this on now because before you come into this building, you really should dress like a tradie. Now, that's probably not transferable, that word. It means a tradesman. So you put on overalls to work in here? Yes. You carry a tool, but yes. Well, look what I'm doing. I'm putting on this funny-looking thing because I'm now here, not as Bob McGuire, the citizen, but also as Bob McGuire, the what? Spiritualist. Well, I'm going to say spiritualist.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to frighten the natives. So we'll put that on, and then we'll say a nice prayer, which I've got in my pocket. Here it is. Here, look at me. I was going to sing the song that Perry Como used to sing.
Ooh.
Bless this house, O Lord, we pray. Make it safe by night and day. Do you remember that?
I don't.
Bless these walls so firm and stout, keeping want and trouble out. I was going to try that, but then it goes a bit high. Bless. Too high. You see what I mean? So I was going to do that, and then I thought, well, it's a bit Mickey Mouse, and I've got to be careful not to frighten the people with words like, bless the people here within, keep them pure and free from sin. See?
Then they weren't going to have sex in their bed.
I'm blessing from another book that says, O Lord, come and bless this house which is now to be our home. Encompass its four sides with the power of your protection so that no evil or harm will come near. And rattle, rattle, rattle. And then over the page, they've probably thrown me out by then. May the spirit of pardon and forgiveness reside with us. Be always ready to heal our divisions. May the spirits of mirth and laughter, hope and faith, playfulness and prayer, compassion and love, they've all now yawned and left the building, be perpetual guests in our... So I'm going to try that around the corner in a minute. And then after 3 minutes of that, I'll just walk out.
Oh, beautiful.
Leave my crew behind to feed them, is which you would say, I would say, would be a secular Eucharist.
Well, it is a secular Eucharist, and why can't we more have more of them? Why can't we just say, I am now eating this bread and tomato sauce or whatever it is, and it is one with I am holy, and it's just different techniques, isn't it, for reminding yourself.
I'm going to go for the, I say for ground here in this most secular of all the countries in the world is Australia.
Yeah.
I have noticed that I can get away with referring to the unknown God.
Okay.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. As I'm leaving the premises this morning, somebody said, oh, you should be going to church. I say, ladies and gentlemen, I am at church because you and I are together. And wherever we are together, there God is. Hooray! See what I mean? Yeah, and then you can say, we're here to worship the unknown God. Now, some fundamentalist Christian will be in the audience and say, oh, I know, he's referring to St. Paul's reference in the Acts of the Apostles. No, it's not yet. To the unknown God. So I'm on safe grounds even doctrinally. Because there is reference to the unknown God, you see.
Yeah.
So I reckon that's safe. I think most people around the universe would be happy with feeling the connections with an unknown God. We're the ones who should be getting known. The more known to each other we are, the more the unknown God will be known. Now, what do you think of that?
I think it's absolutely perfect. I agree 100%. It's like meeting each other in our hearts, which is the way you and I've always met, Bob. I've always just loved you. And it's so great.
Yeah, it's finished. You're kicking me out.
No, I don't want to kick you out. I thought you were going to piss off on me.
I am going to. That's not. Is there any more, Stephen? Have you got other questions there on or comments?
Yeah, we do, Bob. You're allowed to be late anyway. You're a bit of a celebrity.
Yeah, celebrities, but I've got to always... time. What else have you got there?
Well, Vin wanted to know about, he was talking about sovereignty further back.
The Church in Rome claims to be a sovereign entity.
Yes.
Well, it's being dragged to the tribunals of a secular society to explain what that means, thank God, because a couple of cardinals the other day were... 5 hours at least, they were dragged over the coals to explain to the United Nations committee about the procedures used by central headquarters, Rome, in the matter of global abuse of children by clerics. So that's been called into, here in Australia, we have a royal commission with a cardinal going next week to appear and will be grilled. And Ireland, of course, Ireland did it magnificently when somebody, I think it was the papal nuncio or something, had told the Irish government or the Irish church, blah, 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 blah. And Ireland said, excuse me, who do you think yous are? Don't talk to us like that because we're a sovereign state. We don't have to take your advice on how to raise children. Thank you very much. And they then closed the embassy to show fair dinkum. Now, I was reading today that, in fact, the embassy is reopened because, in fact, they're quoting the Francis factor.
Mm-hmm.
Seems to have indicated to the Irish that there is a brand new day. Ooh, so they said it would be churlish of us to keep the embassy closed in the fresh atmosphere that seems to be spreading around the world because of Frank. So that's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, that's
nice. I agree with Vin. You've got a problem with that sovereign entity because, in fact, I think the wars, what was it, Garibaldi, 1900, and what is it? When they the papal states stretched across Italy as a result of historic grabs for power by France and Portugal and Spain and everybody else, the Roman Church ended up with the papal states went from east to west Now, I think the revolutions that were going on, the risorgimentos that were going on in Italy, I think they had Rome over and made another offer of a bargain. The bargain was, we're going to take the Papal States back anyway, but I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll give you one square mile for yourselves and you can be sovereign. In fact, we'll call it Vatican State. So that was the bargain that was made. The Roman Church, for better or worse, grabbed the bargain, lost the Papal States back to Italy, where they belonged, and ended up with a tiny enclave, which I think is an independent state even in the United Nations. See? Now, that can be unravelled at any time, because, in fact, it's got nothing to do with Jesus or with Christianity. It's got to do with the fabric of the Roman style of Christianity. Which says you've got to have real estate and you've got to have some kind of, be embedded in a culture. And they embedded themselves in the Italian culture, for better or worse, for the Italians. Now, listen, I better go in a minute.
I've got to tell you that they love you. And Vin might be interested in talking with you at another time. He knows a lot about sovereignty. And you're into it, Bob?
Yeah, I'll do anything for world peace.
You will. I know you will. Yeah. That's
so I'm getting around corner to see the rich for world
peace. That's right. You are. So? And thank you so much for coming, Bob, and I really look forward to seeing you.
Thank you, Stephen Roberts.
Oh, yes. Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Because you got to, Gillian, we have to always remember to pay respects to the workers first.
Oh, yes.
Stephen Roberts, there would be no you and me. See what
Stephen
I mean?
Roberts is absolutely magnificent. He is absolutely incredible. He is the worker. You're completely right, Father Bob. Thank you for reminding me.
Now, what do I press? Do I press anything, or did you just leave me?
You can press the red thing. You can say goodbye, Ireland. There's a telephone.
Goodbye, world, and bless this house, O Lord, we pray. Make it safe by night and day.